I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into another episode of The Memo on this Monday, March the 21st, 2016. Brad Locke here with you, along with special guest co-host, Emma Kent. She's back. Hello, Emma.
That's me. I haven't done this in a while. It's been since, like, maybe December or January, probably.
It's been a little while.
I don't know. It was a lot in a row, I remember.
Yeah, and I was starting to feel like a permanent host, and then Derek came back in.
And Derek came back.
Or you came back, whichever one of you.
We both were gone for a little while there.
Yeah.
But now Derek's out today doing real work while we sit here and shoot the bull. Welcome in. I hope everybody had a wonderful, fun-filled weekend. I know I did. Did you, Emma?
Mm-hmm, I did.
Yeah. What'd you get up to?
My husband and I went to Chattanooga, Tennessee. Oh, yeah.
That's where I met my wife.
Oh, yeah.
Well, technically, I met my wife on top of Lookout Mountain, which is
right
just the other side of the state line in Georgia. But
yeah.
Then we went out. Then we went down the mountain that first night we met and hung out in Chattanooga. Because that's where
we went down the mountain.
Down the mountain. That's where the kids. That's where the kids from Covenant College would go down the mountain to hang out in Chattanooga.
Actually, the two friends that we stayed with both went to Covenant College.
Really?
Mm-hmm. They live on Lookout Mountain.
Did they meet at Covenant College?
They did.
They call it the marriage mill on the hill for a reason.
I believe it.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Hey, you had a good big weekend, Brad. Congratulations.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, I did. The Mustache Bash, the final one, which was a bittersweet night because it's the last one, but it was fun. Really, really good time there.
You got your big award that you've been campaigning for.
I got the award I've been lobbying for. I got the Creeper Award
for
the creepiest mustache.
And it's still there on your face.
It is. And the award is now in my cubicle for everyone to see. Because the wife was like, you're not hanging that in the living room, so.
I mean, if you're going to go around with that thing for 2 months... You deserve the award.
It's dedication.
That's right.
Are you going to keep it now, or are you going to...
This?
Yeah.
I'll keep it as long as I need to.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, I still have that play I'm in, so I have the Westerns.
Oh, so you need it for that.
So I'll get it for that. But then after that, I'll get rid of it.
Okay. So what's the timeline there?
I'm curious.
Mid-April. It'll be gone by mid-April.
Mid-April. That's not bad.
Another 3 or 4 weeks.
Couple more weeks.
Yeah. So... But, Amanda Hayden, Jason Hayden, and the others who put that bash on just did a fantastic job. It was a good time.
I know that when Jason was here last week, you talked about some surprises that they were going to have. I saw that they had the giant Twister game.
The giant Twister game.
What was it, the photo booth?
They had the photo booth in the Volkswagen van. Can't remember the lady's name now that had it set up, but you can follow her on Instagram. I think it's... at Photobus72, FOTOBUS72. I had a good time, and you would get in there with whoever, your friends, and there's, I think at one point, like 7 or 8 of us in that van somehow got crowded in there. And it would take 4 pictures, and then you could just put in your email address, and it would send 4 pictures to you already with the Mustache Bash written in the middle. It's this collage type thing. It was pretty cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that he had the Twister. Lauren Wood, I found out, is pretty good at Twister. I think she would have won if not for like a technicality. She didn't hear Amanda Hayden was doing the calling out the right hand on blue, and I think Lauren misheard. She was down to the top three. She was in the top three there. I bowed out much earlier than that. I might have made it. Maybe it was 10 people left. Giant Twister board.
You know who I bet is good at Twister?
Huh?
Justin
Whitmore?
He's so tall.
Yeah, I mean, like, think
true.
About his, like,
he's got,
wingspan.
He's got the wingspan.
Could,
he's like 6'4", 6'5".
He could the entire
wouldn't
thing.
Phase him. Yeah.
Yeah, it but would
he
be so
there.
Easy.
He was watching NCAA hoops with buddies in Tunica or somewhere. That's where he's been last 4 or 5 days. So he was a good time. Had that. He had all the different awards, the overall mustache award, best dress, best costume, or whatever. Had a go-go dancer, I guess that's what you call her, up there behind the DJ.
That sounds
pretty
sketchy,
pretty
Brad.
Fun.
Yeah.
Hey, she was busting a move.
She like in a cage?
Had
or?
A couple, no, cage. Just up on like a platform behind the DJ.
Oh, okay.
Because I put a picture on my Facebook page, Emma. Go look.
Now I'm going to have to edit.
Nah. You had good food, good drink, had a few games that you could play. had the mustache ride, the seesaw. It was great. And they had an auctioned off a lot of items. And I don't know if anybody bought it, but they auctioned off the mustache ride too, the seesaw.
Oh, cool.
I don't know who bought it.
What if you had that in your backyard? That'd be cool. Be
freaking amazing.
Conversation starter for sure. Yeah. I thought, you know, on that point, Zach had a good story in Sunday's paper about the history of the mustache bash, which for me, remember in the beginning of it, because of Emily Lacaze and Todd Sherman both working here and being a big part of starting it up. And
yeah.
It was kind of neat to see Emily quoted in the story.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It was also cool. You mentioned that mustache, the seesaw. You know, if you would have asked me my favorite memory of mustache bashes, I would have said the time that Fred Pitts and Jason Shelton rode it together when they were campaigning each other. And I noticed in the story that Emily and Amanda said the same thing.
Yeah,
so that
yeah.
really kind of was a powerful, pretty cool moment.
It was. And Jason Shelton and his fiancée showed up on Saturday. I got to meet her, Chelsea Rick. Lovely, lovely young lady. I saw a lot of people there, I know. You know, it's kind of one of those cool parties you go to and see a bunch of friends that you don't necessarily see all the time. And everybody was dressed up crazy. Well, most everybody. I did find an outfit for like $15 total.
Cool.
Yeah, a really loud shirt.
So where did you go?
I went to the Sanctuary Hospice shop here on Gloucester.
Nice.
And then the most expensive thing I bought was the aviator shades for $5 at Walmart. Yeah, so I thought I was looking pretty fly, honestly.
So you even had the cigarette behind your ear?
Yeah, I had borrowed a cigarette from somebody. I don't smoke, but I was like, yeah, it'd be a prop. Put that behind my ear. So yeah. It's a good time. Good times. There were some cool paintings they had for auction, too. One of them had Fred Rogers on it, said everything's good in the hood.
I saw that on Facebook.
That's my favorite painting. Yeah. Trying to think what else they did. Man, I don't know. It was a good time. Good times. Then we went to Waffle House.
Always good.
Lauren Wood had never been to Waffle House before.
Never? Wow.
I guess they don't have those
anywhere.
They don't have those up north.
They don't
north.
Have those in Michigan?
No.
She's from Michigan. Yeah, well, you know. Emma here is going to talk with us about the Arts and Education series that she's doing that's running in the paper this week. We have Bobby Harrison on to talk about adequate education programs and possible changes there. And it being Monday, I will have crime reports for
Woo-hoo.
Everybody. We have some good ones today. So let's get into the show now. Let's go. So, Emma, we'll start with you and the Arts and Education series that began Sunday, had two stories Sunday, had a story in today's paper. You can find these at djournal.com as well, and then one more story tomorrow. So, it's about just what it sounds like, about the arts in our public schools uh-huh. in Mississippi, kind of the role they play and, you know, how to make them an integral part of the education process, because as you know, with tight budgets and test score pressures, sometimes the arts can kind of get shoved to the side. So what kind of led you to want to do this series?
I just think it's interesting because the arts, like when people say the arts, you think of like this really creative kind of, I mean, you just think about like that creativity and like expression and like all of those things, which are really important. But I think it's really neat that the arts also have some really practical applications and like some really, you know, kids can learn really practical skills just through using the arts. And I think in a way they can be a solution to a lot of problems that kids have at school or that schools have with keeping kids engaged and, you know, getting them interested in what they're doing and just helping them succeed. So I think it's just something interesting to look at, you know, just to see, are we using the arts to their full potential? Like, could we use them better? Could they help our kids more? That kind of thing.
Yeah. And when you look at the like school funding, for instance, when school districts are trying to cut budgets, usually one of the first things to go is the arts, which to me is a crying shame. I understand you need the core subjects, certainly. But I think maybe some people don't quite appreciate the importance of teaching the arts. And so in Mississippi and some school districts around here, Emma, they have to get kind of creative, so to speak, in making the arts a key part of educating kids. So and we're going to talk about this whole schools initiative. You know, one of the efforts is just to try to use, like you said, the arts for practical purposes and to help teach kids, which can be done.
Yeah. And if you think about it, like to me, it makes a lot of sense because if you think about little kids, like they love, they love to like get their hands on everything, and like they're going to be more interested in math if you're letting them like, use really cool like colors or like construction paper. I mean, if and it sounds kind of like simple. I don't know. It sounds kind of weird to say it, but like I think it really is. It makes sense to me that the younger kids are gonna really hold on to something more if you give them like if you make it fun, you know, because that's how they learn. And so, so whole schools is all about that. I mean, it's all about getting. Marrying kind of those practical skills, like if you're learning how to multiply or whatever, but you're, you know, that's pretty cut and dry. Yeah. But if you add something fun to it and you make it an art project, but it's the art is the vehicle for the learning, then the kids are more likely to kind of retain that information and actually be interested during class. So that's what the Whole Schools Initiative is trying to do. And it's a Mississippi only thing. It's from the Mississippi Arts Commission, and there's I think 34 schools
that use it
across the state that use it,
including Tupelo Public School District. In fact, Gerald Loden, the superintendent for the past few years, he kind of put an emphasis on arts education, didn't he, when he came on?
Yeah, they went district-wide with the initiative, so all of the schools except for the high school use it, and that's just because it's kind of geared toward... Yeah. It would be hard to do at the high school. It's not really geared for the high school courses and the kids. But and Tupelo High School has a lot of arts programs anyway, so they still have that focus. But yeah, I mean, he thinks in interviewing him for the story, you know, he said it's different and it kind of gives us an edge. And you know, we think it's worth it. We think it's worth investing in. It's going to help us on tests and it's going to help our kids in the long run. And so. So, yeah, I mean, they're pretty gung-ho about it here.
Yeah. You spoke also to Jimmy Weeks, superintendent of Lee County Schools. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things he kind of touched on was just how tough it can be to balance everything, to get those core subjects taught, to get kids ready for the test, but still be able to work in the arts somehow. And, again, with the, you know, the funding issues in Mississippi.
Yeah.
It's a tough – it's kind of like a catch-22 almost.
Yeah. I mean, if you're underfunded – every year, and you've got to say, like, I mean, I think he said this, you know, you're like, well, I need new history textbooks so that my kids can pass the history exam so that our district can be rated well so that people will stay here. I mean, you know, it's just kind of a big cycle. And so the arts sometimes get pushed outside of that because you can't test kids on the arts, and so they're not going to factor in. To all of those scores and accountability measures. And so, but at the same time, kind of what the series shows is that, they offer a lot of benefits that can help in those areas in the long run. So it's, you know, it's complicated like everything in education, but it's interesting, I think.
The story you had today, really enjoyed. You talked to four young people, involved in the arts, all the way from a college student at the University of Alabama, who's from the region, down to a middle schooler, who sings. You talked to Nikki Reese, who's a member of the Shannon High School band. You spoke to, Sadler Sanders, the girl at Alabama. Mm-hmm. She does dance. You spoke to, Riley Mulrooney, really is into art. Mm-hmm. She's, how old is she? She's a fifth grader. And then Apple McHaney, who is a middle schooler and loves to sing. And he just kind of did four little vignettes on each of these people. And I mean, they're all fascinating. The one that really caught my attention was Nikki Reese, because she's been through a lot of stuff in her life, and she was very open in talking about it in the story. Mm-hmm. And music has kind of been the one thing she's always come back to help her get through some like dark times, hasn't she?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's real for so many people. I mean, and lots of kids struggle with, I mean, maybe not as intense as that particular situation, but a lot of kids, I mean, growing up is just hard, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think the arts is an outlet, and I think a lot of people carry that all the way. You know, through their adult lives. And so I think it shows the importance, you know, yes, the arts have practical importance and this is practical, but it's also kind of just like being a person, like that helps you deal with life, which is important.
Yeah,
so,
no doubt.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed writing those. Those were fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got one more in this series coming, tomorrow, Tuesday's journal. What's that going to be about?
That one is kind of, it's about like the first story was kind of an overview, and then you have the vignettes, and this is kind of like where we are and kind of what's happening in our classrooms with the arts. And it's through my reporting, I found that a lot of teachers, even at schools that aren't using the Whole Schools Initiative, are trying to use the arts and seeing kind of the value of using those in their classrooms just with their everyday lessons. And so it's kind of this movement of arts becoming less of an isolated subject and more of a tool, like a teaching tool for all teachers and not just art teachers. And so it's just looking at that change and the things that are going on in our classrooms. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, it's a good series. I've really enjoyed it so far. And
thanks, Brad.
It concludes tomorrow. You can find all these stories in the Daily Journal. There are two of them in Sunday's Journal, one today, one coming tomorrow. Find them all, of course, also at djournal.com.
And with today's, we have some videos.
Oh, we sure do.
The great Chris Kiefer over here.
Yeah, we've got
put together for us.
Riley Mulrooney and Apple McCaney. You got a couple of videos. Yeah. Scroll to the bottom of the story. You'll find them there. Good stuff from both of y'all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I need to remind y'all about the two sports podcasts we have produced here at the Daily Journal, djournal.com. We've got Prep Rally, a high school sports podcast with myself and Gene Phelps every Wednesday. You can watch the webcast if you want in the morning at djournal.com, and then the podcast version will drop usually in the afternoon, pretty early in the afternoon, talking high school sports. So check that out on iTunes, your podcast app, or preprally.djournal.com. And every Thursday, we've got double coverage with Parrish Alford and Logan Lowry, Ole Miss and Mississippi State sports talk with those two guys. You can listen to that on iTunes as well, your podcast apps, or doublecoverage.djournal.com.
All right, now we've got Bobby Harrison on today to talk a little bit about some possible changes to the Mississippi Adequate Education Program during the final weeks of the legislative session. But it's kind of a strange situation. The legislation has passed the House and is in the Senate right now, and it doesn't change the funding formula at all, but it keeps the code sections alive so that the changes could be made later by a conference committee, which is kind of an odd situation. Is that right, Bobby?
That's right. I mean, it is kind of unusual, especially with such a big piece of legislation, a potentially big piece of legislation. There's been talk of making major changes to the Mississippi Adequate Education Program, which is, of course, the formula used to provide state funds to local school districts for everything from teacher pay to the maintenance, to keeping the lights on, to, you know, just about everything that local school districts do. They depend on MAEP money, which, of course, has been underfunded, about $1.7 billion since 2008, and there's talk of making some major changes, but here we are well over halfway past the session, and there's been no debate about what those changes would be. Instead of this legislation has been passed, as you said, to just keep everything alive. You know, they call that dummy bills or placeholder bills, or, you know, or to with apologies to William Faulkner, it could be a bunch of sound and fury signifying nothing. There could be major changes for local school districts as far as the money they get from MAEP.
Right. And so, and this isn't the first instance of this during this session. Is that right? I mean, they've done this with the gas tax bill as
well.
That's
right. The infrastructure legislation. They're also doing the same thing with that. They're just keeping everything alive. So later in the process, they could do anything from raise gas taxes, with the legislation that's alive, they could, as far as infrastructure, they could raise any tax to pay for it. And, you know, and this is kind of inside baseball, Emma, to a certain extent. And, you know, most people don't pay attention to where a bill comes from, whether it comes from the House or the Senate. But what this does by doing it this way, I mean, well, let me back up for a second. Normally the way it works, bills are introduced that have particular purposes, and they're assigned to a committee that normally deals with the bill, the purposes addressed in the bill. And they're debated in the committee, and amendments are offered, and then often the public hearings are held where people come in and discuss what these changes would mean, experts. And then from the committee, it goes to the House or Senate floor, and the members have an opportunity to debate it again and then offer amendments. But on these two major pieces of legislation, there was no debate in the House and Senate committees. Well, so far there's been no debate, and what it appears is going to happen, the bills are going to go through the process without any changes, without any notion of what these bills would actually do, and then they're going to get to a conference committee where three House members and three Senate members of the Senate House leadership will work out an agreement. And then they could go back to the House and Senate floor where the members would have the opportunity to vote up or down. But they can't send them back to committee for more negotiation, to conference committee for more negotiations. But those are the only choices. They don't have an opportunity to offer amendments. The legislature has always been dependent on leadership to get things done. But members like to think they have some influence in the process. And this, by just bypassing the committee process and just going straight to conference, it takes all the power away from the individual members and gives it solely to the leadership. And it appears the membership is just going to sit by and let this happen. So, it's a different way to do it. You can argue you can argue whether it's the right way or the wrong way. But what it does, it no doubt takes a say away from the individual members of the House and Senate.
Right. And these aren't, and they're not just talking about making minor changes. And MAEP is one of those things that's kind of controversial anyway. So it's interesting that they would want to use this. I guess that kind of makes sense why they would want to use this process. But it is also interesting that they would use it for such a big issue. In your story, you said some of the changes that they could make to MAEP include providing the amount of funds. Right now, MAEP, they calculate it by figuring out how much it takes to fund a C-rated school district, which is average, I guess. And so they're talking about changing it to funding the amount of money to fund an A or B school district instead,
right,
which will be the difference of about $80 million. On the annual funding. And so, that's kind of a big deal. So it is interesting, I think, that they're thinking about doing it this way, or that they're planning to.
Yeah, it's a big deal in a state where we're already last or near last in education funding, and they're talking about making changes to reduce funding even more. That's the type of thing you would think you'd want to debate in the cold light of day. And, I'm old enough, Emma, I hate to say that I can remember when MAEP was passed in 97, it went through an extensive process. It started in a subcommittee in the Senate it actually went through a 3 or 4 year process, but the year finally passed in 97. It went to a Senate Education Subcommittee and went through the full Senate Education Committee, and then it went to the Senate floor and was debated extensively for literally hours. And then after it passed the Senate, everybody said it's going to die in the House, but it went to the House and it passed the House Education Committee, and then it was double referred and went to the Senate Appropriation Committee, and there was a subcommittee of the Senate subcommittee of the Senate of the House Appropriations Committee called the General Bills Subcommittee, and the joke was that's where bills went to die. And at the time, which was unheard of, Ronnie Musgrove, who was presiding officer, and the lieutenant governor was presiding officer in the Senate, actually walked down the hall to the House General Bill Subcommittee of the Appropriation Committee, that just didn't happen, and made a pitch for the bill. To everybody's surprise, the General Bill Subcommittee passed it, got to the floor of the House, it was debated extensively. Changes were made. Then it went to conference committee where they had an open conference process. And it went on for days, and it was debated and finally passed. And then the governor vetoed it, and it was passed over to governor's veto. Yeah. So it went through a very open process where everybody had an opportunity to have input. That appears what may be in stark contrast to what's going to happen this session.
You have a good memory, Bobby.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Bobby, for explaining it to us, because it's kind of a strange thing and kind of confusing. So thanks for being on with us to talk about it.
You bet. Y'all have a good day.
You too.
Need to remind y'all to watch the Daily Journal's Capitol View webcast each Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Capitol Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison, who you just heard on the show, he'll provide commentary and analysis on the issues being debated by Mississippi lawmakers. You can watch live each Monday afternoon around 2 o'clock, or catch the replay later in the day. New episodes will be released as long as the legislature is in session. So look for a new episode today at djournal.com. Time now for the news memo, and for more on these stories, read the Daily Journal or visit djournal.com. The Mississippi State women's basketball team reached the Sweet 16 with a win over Michigan State on Sunday. The fifth-seeded Bulldogs reached the round of 16 for just the second time in school history with a 74-72 victory. MSU forward Brianna Richardson made a three-pointer with 34 seconds left to break a tie score. The Bulldogs will travel to Bridgeport, Connecticut, and likely play top-seeded UConn on Saturday. UConn has won 70 games in a row and three straight national titles.
Legislation to make all school superintendents in Mississippi appointed appears to be on the verge of becoming a reality. On Friday, the House Education Committee passed a bill that would replace the state's elected superintendents. It must now be approved by the full House. Various groups have long supported making all superintendents appointed instead of elected. They say it would broaden the pool of candidates. Governor Phil Bryant also supports the change.
The Alcorn County Child Care Facility that was closed last week because of alleged physical and sexual abuse of children received high marks in its last inspection in December. Details are still limited around the closing of the Circle Y Child Care Facility in Corinth. The Mississippi State Department of Health issued an emergency license suspension on Wednesday. A notice posted on the door said there was reasonable cause to believe that at least six children enrolled in the facility had been sexually and physically abused.
A Lee County volunteer firefighter was charged with driving under the influence after wrecking a fire engine on Thursday evening. The Unity Fellowship Volunteer Fire Department engine was traveling south on Old Saltillo Road, just south of Barnes Crossing Road, when it left the road and came to rest in a rain-soaked field. Deputies responding to the scene saw that driver Philip W. Gassaway was impaired. He was charged with DUI first offense. Unity Fire Chief Harold Sanford could not be reached for comment. A post on the department's Facebook page indicated that Gassaway is no longer with the department.
A Mississippi Senate committee passed a bill that would allow guns in churches. Places of worship would be allowed to designate people with concealed carry permits as security personnel. It would give those acting within that capacity a legal defense against criminal charges if they hurt or kill someone. Each member would be required to have a concealed carry permit and go through firearms training by someone with a law enforcement or military background before getting that legal protection. The full Senate still must approve the measure. It passed the House on February 17th. Be sure to check out Thrive Marketing, a full-service digital marketing company located in Tupelo, providing websites, search engine optimization, social media management, email, and text messaging services to local businesses. Find them online at thrive.ms.
All right, and now Brad's going to give us some crime reports. He said he's got some good ones for us.
Oh, we've always got some good ones.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. How good?
Pretty good. Like, not the best ever, but these are some pretty good ones.
Okay, well, let's hear them.
Okay. Crime reports, you can find more of these on my blog at tipsheet.djournal.com. Here we go. A County Road 325 Tupelo man said his air conditioner wasn't running right, so he called a repairman who discovered someone had cut a wire. The man said a lot of strange things have been going on there. There have been knocks at the door, but when he opens the door, no one is there.
Ooh.
Well, those are really terrible ghost sounds we're making.
Sounds like a wounded whale.
Need the X-Files theme on here or something.
Can ghosts cut wires, though?
Yeah, can they hold scissors?
Well,
yeah,
hey, have you seen the movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze? Yeah. If you, like, focus enough of your energy,
maybe Whoopi Goldberg is cutting the wire.
Maybe so. Yeah,
maybe
remember,
they're using the force.
He was trying to kick a can, and he finally focused his energy, and he was kicking the can and moving the penny up the wall, up the door.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think if it's
Sam
possible.
Is doing it.
If it's a powerful enough ghost.
I think
like
if we
Sam,
can believe that the ghost is doing it, we can believe that the ghost has the ability to cut the wire.
Yeah, I mean.
You know what I mean? Like, why stop with the ghost? Give it.
Once there's a ghost involved.
Give it hands.
Could be multiple ghosts. Could be.
Or multiple ghosts. How many ghosts does it take to cut a wire?
Okay.
Sounds like a good click hole story.
Yeah.
Click hole. Okay. An East Main Street repair shop said a woman became irate and started cursing when she saw the bill to fix her car. Well, who amongst us has not felt like doing that at some point after getting a car bill?
Yeah, bravo to that lady for just doing it.
I guess. I mean,
not waiting until she got back in her car driving away.
So what I should have done.
I guess this was the estimate, said the bill, to fix her car. That implies that they think it's not been fixed yet. Because usually you get an estimate so you have an idea how much you're going to have to pay.
Well, then why are you angry? Just go somewhere else and get another estimate.
Yeah, it's probably going to be about the same.
I want to know what was wrong with her car. I mean, was it reasonable that she was angry, or
who knows? I mean, there are some. Yeah, I mean, there's a reputation that some car shops have unsavory practices, price gouging, or whatever you want to call it. Maybe charging too much, but you know, you don't know that that's the case here. Probably just she's like, okay, that's much more money than I have in my bank account, and so this is how she reacted. So
maybe too, her car is immobile right now, and so she didn't have any choice but to get it fixed.
Yeah, so I feel your pain, lady. But on the other hand, becoming irate and cursing at people probably not going to solve your problem.
It's not going to lower the price any that way.
No, it's not. Well, because of this reaction, I think we'll just knock a few hundred off your repair bill. I mean, gosh, they did that every time somebody threw a fit. A Drive 1295 Morville woman said a white male wearing a white t-shirt and camouflage pants walked up to her house and offered her $20 to... I just kind of want to know what you think might happen next. What's he offering her $20 for, Emma? Let's see if you can guess. Come on, give me something. He's offering her $20 to do what?
Well...
Nothing gross, okay? I'll go ahead and tell you that.
Okay. I don't know.
Use her washing machine. That's what I'm going to say.
Use her phone.
That's a good guess. He wanted to ride into town.
Okay.
$20.
I'm really glad that the sentence ended that way.
To drive him into town.
Just so you know.
She told him no, and so he then walked into the woods behind her house. I wonder if he's hanging out with that chick from last week with the white jacket that walked out of the woods and was acting crazy and then
woods
went
people.
Back in the woods.
Yeah, he went into the woods.
Yeah. I think that may have happened in Morville as well. I have to go back and...
Maybe he was a ghost.
Maybe we know who's been cutting the wires.
He's wearing a white shirt. I mean, you know.
She was wearing a white jacket,
Maybe white sheet. Yeah. I don't know. In fact, I've got that report from last week. Here it is. Yeah, because remember last week she was like coming out threatening to kill children, and then she told that lady, they're coming to kill you. And then she walked back into the woods. That also happened in Morville, by the way. So we got
the
strange.
Same thing?
I mean,
that lady was in Morville.
Yeah,
right.
Last week that lady was in Morville. So
let's take a field trip to the woods.
Let's go into the woods
in
of
Morville
and hope we don't die.
And film Blair Witch
and
part
see what
two.
Crazy people and ghosts
out there.
We could
use the Daily Journal camcorder and.
Jeez.
You'd have to shake it like the whole time, though. That movie makes me dizzy.
No tripod.
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty good offer. $20 for a ride into town. I mean, yeah, it's a strange guy, and you're a female, so. Probably something could go wrong there, I'm guessing. So good for her saying no. It's probably the wise choice.
Yeah.
But if it were me, I'd be like, $20. That's a lot of money. I'm willing to risk my personal safety for $20, honestly.
Do you think that man would want to ride to town with you, though? Like, because of your mustache?
He probably wouldn't. He'd probably be like, you're going to have to pay me $20 to ride with you. <That's right.
laughs> I think your mustache is a good defense mechanism, Brad.
I think so.
It's like, you know, how animals, they adapt.
Right.
Some people take karate and
some
people carry mace.
Some people grow scary facial hair.
But hey, it was free, right?
I know who my true friends are now. They still hang around me. Finally, a man, and this is like the most redneck thing ever to happen. A man said he was hanging out with friends in the sand pits. I shrugged just then. The sand pits off of Oakview Street.
Oh, those sand pits.
I don't know.
You've never been in the sand pits?
I don't know where Oakview is. I've never been in the sand pits. Right. He said he fell asleep. I guess in the sand pits. Fell asleep in the sand. Maybe he was in his truck. I don't know. But he fell asleep, and when he woke up, his Ducks Unlimited wallet and $140 were missing. Fell asleep in the sand pit. This is what happens when you fall asleep in the sand pits, kids. Get your money stolen.
Yeah.
Your Ducks Unlimited wallet, which... probably a pretty sweet wallet, let's be honest.
All right. There's a key question. Are there woods near the sand pits?
I'm guessing probably so.
So, could be the same person again.
I don't think you see many sand pits in town.
Where is it?
It said Oakview Street. I don't know. Emma's going to map this thing for us.
Oakview
Street. This should be in Tupelo, I guess.
Tupelo. I'm going to see if I can Google.
Maybe just outside Tupelo. But yeah. So, I don't know.
So his wallet and his what else were missing?
His money that was in the wallet, I guess.
Yeah, I guess
maybe
if your
that's where the guy. Maybe that did that happen before he offered the lady $20? He took
I'm not
the $20
sure.
from the guy in the sand pits.
Maybe so.
Went back into the woods
and found these guys hanging out at the sand pits. Like, I'm gonna wait till this guy falls asleep in the sand pits and make off with his money.
That looks pretty sandy to me.
Wow, yeah, you got the Google image
Oakview
thing.
Oakview Drive? I mean, it's not Oakview Drive in Tupelo.
There's a lot of sand.
And then that looks, let's drop our little person here on the sand pit. And it's surrounded by woods, so.
Yeah, that's a picture of the sand pit. Oh, well, there's the guy sleeping.
I was going to say, what if the Google car came by while he was sleeping?
There's the guy sleeping in the sand pits. Hey, buddy, your wallet's gone.
Oh, yeah, that's a definite sand pit.
It looks like a fun place to hang out.
Yeah.
Whoa, let me tell
you. Or take a nap.
Yeah, let's go to sleep in the sand pits. You get sand in your shorts and get your wallet stolen. It's a good time for everybody. Okay, well, that's it for the police reports today. Anyway, again, tipsheet.djournal.com, and we should hopefully have some more reports today, see what kind of nonsense people got up to over the weekend.
Our Monday, is that the best day?
It depends. Sometimes the Tupelo Police Department gets a little backed up with their reports and doesn't send them until Tuesday, but hopefully they'll send some today. Usually we'll get Lee County reports every day, and Lee County reports, as we know, tend to be the best reports.
Gotcha.
They are generally more entertaining.
That's where the crazy stuff happens, mostly.
The county issue, the garbage cans?
That's where the crazy is. He's out in the county.
I live out in the county now.
Yeah, you do. Watch out.
The other day I walked into my neighborhood. I drove into my neighborhood. And
you walked out of the woods into your neighborhood.
And there were two people dressed in all white walking out of the woods.
Seriously?
And they were glowing.
You're just making that up. No.
And they were carrying wire cutters.
You had me going until the glowing part.
Yeah, they were.
Right, like, really?
There were two. I just have to tell you about a couple of things.
Sure,
really fast.
Go ahead.
There's a lot of horses, like, in my area, yeah. Right? So there's like these two men on horses, and I live in like a neighborhood, right?
Oh yeah, but you see that around here a lot. Yeah, I see them going down the side of 45.
Yeah, so these two guys
were just by my house.
Yeah,
actually.
They're just on horses, like walking through the neighborhood.
Yeah,
I guess I don't know. It was odd to me.
You live out near Verona, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, hold on, one more thing.
Go ahead. We got nothing but time. It's a podcast.
The
no
other
time
day,
limit.
No, the other day there was like I was at home and I was cleaning. It was like a Saturday. I was like cleaning the house or whatever, and Jacob left to go to the grocery store, and he calls me and he's like, "Hey, will you lock all the doors in the house?" And I was like, "Why?" And he was like, "Just lock all the doors." I was like, "Okay, well, are you going to tell me like why I'm locking all the doors?" It's like, "I'll do it." And he was like, "I just saw like a bunch of cops. It looked like they were like on a manhunt in the woods."
No, like, there's a possible killer on the
like,
loose.
Just like
the
a
house.
Few miles like up the road right before you get on 45 near my house. And he was like, "I would just feel better if you'd lock all the doors." And I was like, okay.
Done.
Were you, so, you were home at the time? He's
yeah.
Just, so he's like, lock yourself in the house.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying. Yeah. It's a good idea.
So, but just, I mean, they were looking in the woods.
Yeah.
So who knows? Maybe.
For the same for our friends
for the
wearing
same people.
White.
Yeah.
Stay out of the woods, kids.
Stay out of the woods, kids. Man, I grew up in the woods just about.
Yeah.
Went in the woods all the time. I never had any trouble.
Well,
no.
Maybe they'll catch these people soon so the woods will be safe again.
Yes.
Or maybe you're one of them.
What?
Oh.
I don't live in the county.
Oh.
Were you in the woods this weekend, Brad?
Can't believe that lady didn't take my $20 offer. No. no, and I haven't been in the woods in a while, actually. So I don't hunt anymore, so I don't get out in the woods as much. And camping to me has become just a pain in the butt. Don't like camping that much.
Your mustache would blend in.
I'm big on like in indoor plumbing and running water and all that, so I'm just, not into camping as much.
Okay.
Anyway, just FYI.
Nobody asked Brad to go camping.
We get your point. We get your hint.
Okay, thanks. All right, that's it for today's show. Thank you all for tuning in. We will be back on Wednesday. We'll see if Derek Russell is back. If not, I mean, Emma did a fine job. We'll just have her
as
back
always.
In here. May have her back in
well,
here anyway.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really thought you were going to get this gig full time for a while there, but sorry.
Yeah.
That's the way
well,
it goes.
What can you do?
It's your second chance.
Oh, okay. This was like an audition?
Pretty much. You didn't know that? It was. Derek's on thin ice. No. But good job, Emma. Thanks.
Thanks, Ben.
Always good to be in here with you. We'll, again, be back Wednesday. Be sure to check us out on Twitter at DJournalMemo. Send us an email, memo@journalinc.com. I'm on Twitter at Brad Locke. Emma's on Twitter at M. Crawford Kent. That's at E.M. Crawford Kent. And Chris Kiefer is on Twitter at Chris Kiefer. There you go.
There you go.
All right. See y'all next time. Have a good one.